Years back, I was teaching a retreat on karma. And one of the retreatants, whose background was in Zen, raised his hand and said, "Why this emphasis on the minutiae of actions and their skillfulness when the unconditioned emptiness is all around us? You can just open up to it and there it is." And I explained, you're not going to see that until you get really observant of what your actions are doing. But his attitude reflects an attitude of quite a few Buddhist practice communities, whether Mahayana or some Theravadin, that we're here to open up to the present moment. The present moment is the goal. That's where the unconditioned lies, our awareness, right here, right now. Which that calls into question, why did the Buddha formulate a path of virtue, concentration, and discernment? In some schools, they define discernment in terms of how you define emptiness, and they have courses of study that goes for years so you get the right understanding of what emptiness is. But you look at the Buddha's take on right view. It doesn't mention emptiness at all. It doesn't mention unconditioned consciousness. If you actually look very carefully, you realize that he teaches the path of actions, training your actions through the precepts, training the actions of your mind through concentration and through discernment. So you become sensitive to what's getting in the way of the unconditioned. You can clear it away. Which is why people who don't focus on the precepts, don't focus on mastering these skills, tend to mistake your present moment awareness for something unconditioned. They see it's there all the time. Always present, seems unconditioned, has no social conditioning, no sense of a person in there if you don't apply it. And so they're missing something really good by falling for something that's artificial. Because when the Buddha focused on actions, he wasn't just focusing on the fact that you do act. He wants you to see the impact of your actions, the extent to which your actions shape your awareness of reality, what's going on around you in the world, what's going on within you inside. And not only sensitive to the fact of action, but also sensitive to whatever harm you're causing, either gross harm or more subtle forms of harm. In fact, the path is one of getting more and more sensitive to the subtleties of where you're causing unnecessary stress, unnecessary disturbance. But first you have to be very clear about where you're causing harm through your actions, which is why the precepts are an important part of the practice. Why concentration as an activity is an important part of the practice. You go from levels of stillness, which seem as still as the mind could possibly get, and you find they can get even more still and more still. And you realize why. Because there are some activities that you are doing that you weren't conscious of in the first stages, but then you become more and more conscious as you progress. Now, the Buddha does mention an unconditioned consciousness, but he makes very clear that it's very different from the consciousness that you have right here, right now. Talk about the fact that your consciousness right here has food. It feeds on things. It feeds on intentions. It feeds on contact. And it feeds on the act of consciousness itself. You have to be aware of that one. Because this consciousness that people say is the unconditioned one that's right here, right now, sometimes it's just conscious of consciousness itself. It's got an object. And any consciousness that has an object is conditioned. There's also the consciousness of the six senses that arises because of the contact between a sense organ and its object. And that is very much conditioned. It happens all the time, but that doesn't mean that it's constant and a ground being. It's just an activity that you're doing all the time. And you're not going to see this until you get sensitive to your actions in general, which is why the Buddha focuses on the precepts, avoiding harm in gross forms, killing, stealing, illicit sex, lying, taking intoxicants. If you're still engaged in these kinds of activities and you don't see the harm you're causing, you're not going to see anything more subtle at all, which is why the people who have the attitude that the precepts are just Sunday school rules, well, they can easily be broken when you say that you have a compassionate motive, are not really learning the lesson from the precepts that they should be learning. They get more focused on the question of attachment to the precepts, saying that the attachment is bad. Well, you're not going to learn from the precepts unless you really try to follow them. Then you come up against in situations in which there's a strong temptation to see that it would actually be better to break the precept. But the Buddha wants you to say no. What would the harm be in breaking the precept? Focus on that. And you're going to see some things you wouldn't have seen before. And this, the whole purpose of the path is to see things you didn't see before. Then it gets more subtle in the practice of concentration. Obvious forms of harm have been cleared away. But there's still the burdensomeness of the fact that concentration has to be fabricated. You're very conscious of this fact as you're trying to get the mind into concentration in the beginning, when it's hard. But as you get more and more inclined in that direction, the mind gets more and more happy to be in a state of stillness. The effort goes underground. You have to develop your sensitivity. Look for what you're doing right here, right now, if you're going to see that. So that's the question the Buddha wants you to ask, which is why his teachings on right view, whether they're mundane right view or transcendent right view, focus on action. What are you doing? Mundane right view basically says there are skillful and unskillful actions, and they're the results of those actions. Four Noble Truths, take it deeper. Focus on the problem of suffering. Again, where are you causing harm through what you're doing? Each of the Four Noble Truths involves an action. Clinging in the First Noble Truth is to be comprehended. The craving in the Second Noble Truth is to be abandoned. The Third Noble Truth is dispassion. Dispassion comes about as a result of looking at your actions when an unskillful form of craving arises in the mind. You want to see what's the origination. The origination is something that comes from within. It's an activity that comes from within. How does it pass away? What's the allure? Wait, why do you go for it? What are the drawbacks? This involves a fair amount of thinking and observation. And focuses attention again inside. Just as the precepts focus attention inside, they may be dealing with your external actions. But the big issue in the precepts, of course, is your intention. What was your intention in doing something? If you kill without intending to, or if you lie without intending to, that's not breaking the precept. So the focus is on your actions and your internal actions. This is where the Buddha wants you to become more and more sensitive. Even with discernment, Buddha points out how you start taking apart your practice of concentration in terms of the aggregates, seeing that these all are fabricated, including the aggregate of consciousness. You incline the mind to the deathless, but then you have to watch out. The perceptions that incline you in that direction, such as the three perceptions of inconstancy, stress, not self, it is possible to cling there. You have an experience of the deathless and you cling to that. So you have to be very sensitive to what you're doing. Circumspect all around. It's only then that you see something that lies beyond what you have fabricated. And you see it because you've been focusing on the fabrications and clearing them out of the way, clearing them out of the way. It's only then that you're going to see the difference between the consciousness that is here in concentration, which is also consciousness at the senses, at the sense of the mind, and what might be unconditioned. There's a passage in Majjhima 140 where the Buddha takes you through the different elements: earth, water, wind, fire, space. And what's left is consciousness, in terms of what they talk about with the Taichans. That's the knower. You've cleared away your passion for things outside, and your consciousness is aware of feelings arising and passing away. It's able to separate itself out from them, observe them. The image he uses of watching someone making a fire. You rub two fire sticks together, and the fire starts. Then you take the sticks apart before the fire has got a chance, and everything calms down. In the same way, feeling comes from contact. You're conscious of that contact, you're conscious of the feeling, but the consciousness is separate from that. As I said, this is the knower, the puru that the Taichans talk about. But they, like the Buddha, are very clear in the fact that this knower is a construct. And only when you see that it's constructed can you get a chance to go beyond it and find something of genuine value. Years back, there was a book that divided all the Buddhist practices into two sorts: those that try to create the unconditioned, and those who tell you the unconditioned is already there and all you have to do is relax into it. And the author of the book presented these as the only two alternatives. And if that were the case, only one of those alternatives would be right. After all, the unconditioned cannot be created. You can't create it through your efforts. It has to be something that's already there. But John Lee gives a third alternative. His image is of getting fresh water out of salt water. The fresh water is there, but just relaxing or letting the salt water sit is not going to get the salt to separate out. You have to distill it. Here John Lee is talking about the effort of the practice. And in distilling it, you're focusing on getting the salt and other minerals out. You're not focusing on the water so much. You taste the water, if there's still any salt in it, you've got to distill it again. You have to put it through the effort of observing the precepts, practicing concentration, developing discernment, getting more and more sensitive to how you are shaping your experience of reality. Even when the mind is very, very quiet, there's still an intentional element going on. When you're sensitive to that, you realize that you've had enough of that and you want something even more peaceful, that's when you have a chance. When the Buddha talks about this, there's the image of the light beam that doesn't land. There are places in the canon where he talks about how ordinary consciousness lands on the different aggregates. Once it lands, then it proliferates, it grows. He switches the image then to a seed, places a seed in the ground, and things will grow. But a consciousness that doesn't land, that's the consciousness of the Arahant. It's like a light beam that doesn't land. You can't detect it, but it's there. It's not based on any object at all. It has nothing to do with any of the six senses. So it is consciousness, but it's of a different sort. And you're going to see the difference between what you're conscious of now as you get the mind to just that state of awareness that's separate from its objects. And you see where that too is constructed, that too is fabricated. And once you've developed this passion for that fabrication, that's when you'll be free. And you don't have to have a right view about that, what you're going to find afterwards, aside from the right view that's going to be good. So focus on doing the work that needs to be done so you get sensitive to what it means to do work, to shape things, to fabricate things, to have intentions, to act on them. Get really sensitive to these activities, because those are the ones that are getting in the way. But you're not going to get them out of the way simply by letting them go. You've got to master them first, because they teach you a lot about sensitivity. And it's the sensitivity that will carry you through.